This is
Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning
on 710 WOR.
Hey, it's Columbus Day. Len is off. Joe Bartlett is with me this morning if you're just joining us. Now, do you think Len is honoring the age of exploration, or do you think he's exploring the 12th hole at his golf course?
I think he's exploring the inside of his eyeballs and sleeping.
that could well be. Good morning, everybody. Our big three today, well, Judge Kavanaugh is now Justice Kavanaugh. He was confirmed to the United States Supreme Court on Saturday. Very dramatic moment. I watched the whole thing. Did you catch it, Joe?
Some of it. I mean, you knew what was going to happen after Susan Collins said she was going to vote yes on Friday.
I know, but just to see all the senators there having to stand up and say no or yay. They don't say yes, they say yes. They say yay.
Yay, yay.
Get up and say yay. Yeah. Susan Collins gave, a very fine speech outlining why she chose to vote for Brett Kavanaugh. She did very, very well. Now the Democrats, of course, say they're going to spend up to, well, they've already pledged $3 million to try to defeat her, but she's pretty popular.
Pretty solid,
state,
right?
I mean, I think she's going to be okay.
And so. Your friend there, Heidi Ho.
Heidi Ho Camp. Well, she, you know, I think she gave that. It doesn't matter which way she was going to go because she's 10 points behind in South Dakota, I think. So she probably is not going to beat her Republican challenger.
Well, that's true. But she could have helped herself a little bit, don't you think?
I think somebody said she's toast either way.
Okay. Well, so there you go. Then give it up. Fall down the sword. Fall down on the sword.
Heidi, Heidi, ho, ho, will be out
but
of there.
Joe Manchin, the only Democrat who voted.
The only one.
Yeah,
well, he's in West Virginia, which is about as red as it gets.
But is there a deal that Trump stays out of West Virginia?
It's going to be interesting to see how aggressively the Republicans pursue Joe Manchin.
Right.
Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, was asked how he felt about Manchin. He said, look, we still want to win seats in the Senate. But you could tell that he was not.
They make
deals. A bloodlust to go after Joe Manchin. So I have a feeling Joe Manchin may be going back to the United States Senate.
Yep.
So
okay. Look, he seems like a decent guy.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Also in the big three, terrible, terrible news coming from upstate New York. The limo crash over the weekend. 18 people in the limo were killed. Two bystanders were killed when the limo driver plowed right through a T-junction coming down a hill and just apparently did not stop and just went right into this parking lot and killed the two innocent bystanders. And we found out from Jesse McKinley, who's the New York Times reporter covering it, that most of the people in the limo, four sisters, were dead on impact. So that limo had to be going fast.
Yeah, heart breaks. I mean, these are four young sisters, all in their 30s, their husbands all killed. A couple of them had kids. And they were celebrating the birthday of the youngest one who had just been married in June. And they did the right thing. They were going to some wineries. Obviously, you don't want to drink and drive.
Yep.
So you get somebody to drive you. And it ends in tragedy.
Well, there's a report now that they had a van originally, but for some reason the van couldn't. They couldn't get the van, so they got this limo instead.
It was a bus.
A bus was going to take
down, apparently.
That's right. The bus broke down, but so they got this limo instead. I think those limos are death traps, if you ask me.
Yeah.
You know.
Hey, we do have. Do you want to hear this? This is one of the sister. Her sister was killed in the limo crash.
Right.
Karina Halsey.
Oh yeah, let's hear what Karina Halsey
has
to say.
She was on Good Morning America.
Just saw her last Saturday. Me, her, and my mom all went to this little plant shop in Vermont, and we had just a really nice day out together.
Mm. Well, that's Karina Halsey.
So my sister was the most beautiful soul that I've ever been so grateful to know in my life.
Oh, gosh. Didn't your heart break?
Yeah. The worst accident, including plane crashes, since 2009 in this country.
Right. The worst one, I think, was a plane crash in Buffalo that killed a lot more people.
Yeah. All right. Rounding out the big three, it is Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day, as some people who don't like Christopher Columbus have to say. But Joe and I, well, we here at WOR, we think it should be Columbus Day now and forever.
Forever.
That's my feeling. No Indigenous Peoples Day.
Look, Columbus, you know what Columbus did. What are you going to go back and read?
He brought disease and destroyed the Indians. That's what he did.
Discovered a great country.
Well,
he began the process that got us here.
Right. I don't know how great it was back then. Apparently, it was
probably wasn't.
You know, they were eating birdseed and berries.
Just imagine the vegetation that existed when these people landed on this continent.
That's true.
Yeah, but it took a lot of I mean, how many people died? First of all, they died along the way. People died when they came here. Wasn't easy.
Yeah. And it was not the Garden of Eden. You know, the left would like you to believe that, oh, before Columbus, before the West, before Europeans discovered the continent of America, it was a wonderful place where everybody lived in peace and harmony and ran naked through the forest.
Yeah, no, this is not the Garden
Actually,
of Eden.
Actually, sounds kind
maybe,
of fun to me. Hey, something I wanted to get into. This is a story that caught my attention in the New York Times. Now, I'm a very big supporter, hardcore supporter of the State of Israel, one of the perhaps the only democracy there in the Middle East. A great country. I've been two times. I love the Israelis. I love the spirit of the place. You know, they literally, the Jews made the desert bloom when they got Israel.
Sure.
They've got
yep.
farms and great stuff. But now there's a wave of anti-Israel sentiment that's settling in the Democratic Party. You have a lot of these young, hardcore lefty Democrats who've been nominated to run for Congress in safe seats, so they're probably going to win. And they are now breaking with the tradition of the Democrats who support Israel. Chuck Schumer, big supporter of Israel.
Sure, sure.
You know, the Democratic establishment has always supported Israel. But these young guns, these hotshots, these lefty pinko commies, they, of course, see Israel as the occupier. They see Palestinians as the occupied. And they are taking direct aim at Israel, and some of them are calling for the United States to stop funding Israel, stop giving Israel money, and stop giving Israel weapons.
But in terms of a political view and a political stance, is that helping them?
Well, this is the question for the Democrats. Republicans see a crack now that they can get in there
yeah.
to pry some Jewish supporters.
Yeah.
And many Jewish people are Democrats and support Democrats because
sure.
they're liberals.
Yeah.
But they think they can pry some Jews back to the Republican side because of some of the things that these young Democrats are saying. Now, there's a fellow named Ilhan Omar. He's a Somali-American Muslim. He's running for an open house seat in Minneapolis. He's denounced the occupation of Palestine. Rashida Tlaib. She's a Palestinian-American Muslim. She's running in Detroit. She thinks that Israel should not get money from the United States anymore. And our very own Ms. Ocasio-Cortez, running in the heavily Democratic district in the Bronx, she has come out and she has denounced the occupation of Palestine, too.
Well, I think that's probably a political move based on the constituency that they would represent, right?
Mm-hmm. But the question is, when does anti-Israel sentiment curdle into anti-Semitism, as it has done in England? If you've noticed, Jeremy Corbyn, who's the leader of the Labour Party, he's had to fend off accusations that a lot of his supporters, a lot of the people in the Labour Party, are anti-Semitic, and he has not done it very, very well.
Well, I think it's kind of unfair to say if you do not support Israel and you have any sympathy for the Palestinians, then it's anti-Semitic. It's not automatic.
I think there's some anti-Semitism on the left. I really do. I see that, especially in England. I think you see that. I think a lot of the left wing feels that Israel's become a bully state, and some of them compare it to Nazi Germany. They see it as the bully. The bully are the Palestinians, and the bulliers, the aggressive, the powerful ones, the Israelis.
Well, I guess the Palestinians, I mean, they are impoverished. And
Well, in some ways, Joe, they only have themselves to blame because Israel has extended the olive branch over and over and over again. Israel wants nothing more than to coexist peacefully with the Palestinians. They've
yeah,
bent
then,
over backwards over the years.
But then they go in and establish these settlements, and, you know, they go into the occupied lands, put their settlements up, and, you know, so I mean, that can be viewed as a hostile move.
Well, they went into those occupied lands and they put settlements in there because those towns, they were hotbeds of terrorism and radicalism
yeah,
and suicide
yeah.
bombers. And they thought the way to break that up was to go in there and occupy some of these places where a lot of the suicide bombers were coming from. So it was a move of self-defense.
I can completely understand Israel's position here. I mean, they're surrounded by people who don't want them there, who don't even accept their existence.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be strong. I understand that completely.
And you know what the national anthem of Israel is? This land is your land. This land is my land. From the Arab border to the Arab border, from the Arab border to the Arab border, this land was made for you and me. I have an old Israeli friend who told me that joke. He said, we're just a little country here, and everywhere we look, we see people who want to push us into the sea.
Well, there's no doubt about President Trump's support of Israel.
Well, that we can be thankful
yeah,
for
right,
because
yeah.
he moved the embassy
That's
to
right, yeah.
Jerusalem. But it's very interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see how these hardcore Democrats who are anti-Israel. They're gonna win these seats, but I don't think the Democratic Party is going to be in trouble if it goes all out against Israel.
By the way, Ocasio-Cortez was on MSNBC this weekend saying that things are so crazy in this country that she has to provide therapy for her constituents. Oh, she's providing therapy for her supporters.
Oh, my God. Help us. Oh, yeah, yeah. All right. When we get back, we're going to check in with ABC News transportation correspondent David Curley. He's on the scene of that horrible limo crash that killed 20 people. Plus, your next chance to win $1,000 is coming up at 10:05 on 710 WOR. Hey, there are only 2 weeks left to get the Genucel Sunspot Corrector absolutely free. You're going to use it for the sunspots, the age spots, and even those red inflamed patches that you picked up by spending too much time in the sun. This is what Renee from Boulder, Colorado has to say about the brand new Genucel Sunspot Corrector. I love the Sunspot Corrector, she says. It is my go-to product every day. I have sunspots and age spots, and I can see a definite difference in my skin since using it. So go to Genucel.com. That's Genucel.com or call 1-800-525-4989. 1-800-525-4989. Order the Genucel. You're going to use that to get rid of the bags and the puffiness under your eyes. And then for free, you're going to get the sunspot corrector that you're going to put on your forehead and get rid of those sunspots and the age spots. Only 2 weeks left to get the sunspot corrector absolutely free. So go to Genucel.com or call 1-800-525-4989. And now let's get the traffic from the city. And a very good Monday morning to everybody. Len is off today. Columbus Day. I never thought that would be his holiday, but apparently he's playing golf, maybe.
No, you think so?
Yeah, you think he's sleeping in?
I don't think his golf course is open on Monday. Although this is a holiday, it should be open.
It should be open, yeah.
Yes.
I bet he's at home listening to every hour of Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning without Len Berman.
I bet so.
Good morning, Joe Bartlett.
Good morning, Michael.
How are you doing? Coming up at 9:40, we have my good friend, the one and only Harvey Fierstein, a Broadway legend. He's got a revival of his terrific play, Torch Song Trilogy, opening up on Broadway at the Helen Hayes Theater. He also wrote the script to Kinky Boots, which is now in its fifth or sixth year on Broadway.
Does he sing?
Very good show.
He's singing this thing?
No, Harvey does not. He wrote Kinky Boots. Okay. He's not in it.
No, but
he's playing one of the boots.
In the new play.
No. Okay. No. The new play is not. Oh, my God. Broadway 101, folks, for Joe Bartlett here. No, Torch Song Trilogy is not a musical.
Okay.
It's a play. You see, a play is something that doesn't have music in it.
Really?
It has scenes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Torch Song Trilogy?
No.
You haven't?
No.
Really?
Well, should I?
Yes, it won the Pulitzer. It won the Tony Award. It's a major landmark play.
Oh, sorry.
Have you heard of Harvey's other musical, La Cage aux Folles?
That I have.
That you've heard of.
That I've had.
That
yes.
You've heard of. Well, I hope you've got some good questions for Harvey.
Yeah, where'd you get that voice?
Better do a little research there, Bartlett. All right, let's check in with ABC News senior transportation correspondent David Curley, who was on the scene where that limo crashed and killed 20 people. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning, Michael. Sad story up here in upstate.
Yeah, what's the latest? What do we know? Do we know anything now about the limo driver?
We don't have details yet. It's all part of the NTSB investigation. They look at everything. They'll look at the vehicle. They'll look at the systems, the brakes, everything else in the vehicle. They'll look at the driver. I can tell you a little bit about the company. It's a small company. They have three vehicles. It's called Prestige Limousines. Over the past 2 years, federal documents show that it had been inspected five times. And four of those times, vehicles were taken out of service.
Wow.
And that is four times the rate of the national average of companies that are inspected like that. Too early to say whether it was something with the vehicle, something with the driver. I mean, the questions, I got to tell you, so spending some time at this intersection, which people say has been problematic before, it's basically you're coming down a regular road downhill, and you come to a T. And it's a state road, you know, just two-lane state road. And on the opposite side is a country store. But there's a stop sign there, too. So how many times have you come up to a state road like that in a T and you see the stop sign, you stop?
Mm-hmm.
This limo barreled right through, no stop, no signs of skid marks across, crosses the state road into this parking lot, strikes two more people, is where we get the 20 fatalities, 18 in the limo, two on the ground, hits another parked vehicle. And then you can see the marks of the limo going into a small creek bed, and the embankment of the creek bed and a small tree actually stopped the vehicle there. It's relatively intact. So the question is, how did all these people inside perish? And We don't have those answers yet. They're not required to wear seatbelts except for the people in the front seat.
Mm.
It was a birthday party for a 30-year-old woman. A lot of family members, friends. You know, there are a lot of people. This is fairly rural upstate. There are a lot of folks who know somebody who was lost in this accident.
You know, David, this happened at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so you can't say that it was dark and he didn't see the intersection coming up. I assume the most limo drivers are operating with a GPS so that they know, hey, I've got a turn coming up here. So you have to really wonder. I mean, to me, the focus is on the driver, because if there was a brake issue, you would have probably seen some sort of skid marks, unless there was absolutely no brakes. But
what if the accelerator got stuck? I just think they're
yeah.
I'm with you in that it was daytime. Standing in the intersection, I don't understand how somebody couldn't have stopped,
yeah.
But we don't know all the mechanical issues. There's just so many questions to be answered. The NTSB is going to brief again later today, and I've gotten some indication that they're going to have additional new information. But these investigations by the NTSB can go on for some time. We're probably not going to get probable cause or what actually happened today or any time soon.
Mm. We're on with the ABC News senior transportation correspondent David Curley. David, have there been concerns about these limos? I mean, I live here in New York City, and they just seem to get, you know, bigger and bigger. They take up the whole block, and they don't look like you can maneuver them too easily.
Some of them can't, and basically, these are chops. I mean, the car companies don't really make these stretch limos. Somebody buys a vehicle, whether it's an SUV or a big Cadillac or whatever, and cuts it in half, extends the chassis, and builds this vehicle. There is no federal agency that oversees these. And this is when we've had these incidents in the past, and we've seen them over the past 3, 4, 5 years. There's always this discussion about it, but they have to meet DMV rules. But as far as how far can you stretch it, what can you do, what can't you do, there really aren't, there is no federal agency that oversees that.
You know, this has got to be a real difficult story to cover, because you got four young sisters, their husbands, and they're out celebrating a birthday. They did the right thing. They went to the winery, wanted to go to Cooperstown. They hired drivers so that they didn't have to be on the roads. It's got to be a shock to the people of that area.
It is, completely, and you're absolutely right. They did. They thought they were doing everything they were supposed to do. Designated driver. It is shocking for these folks here. And as I mentioned, I think everybody in this small community probably knew somebody who just lost their lives in an instant on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
And once again, we'll have these questions about, depending on what's found. You know, was it something with the vehicle? Will we talk again about whether there should be regulations for these or some kind of restrictions on what you can and cannot do? Mm-hmm. And by the way, this was not a new vehicle. This was a 2001 Ford Excursion.
Wow.
That had been extended.
Wow. Okay. ABC News senior transportation correspondent David Curley.
Thanks, David.
Covering that horrific limo accident. Thanks a lot, David.
Yeah, okay. One of the ants says, you just can't wrap your head around it.
No, of course not. All right, let's get the news now at 9:30 from Jeff McKinney. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. And you really can't wrap your head around this thing. Yesterday, as I was saying before, when this story crossed my phone yesterday, I thought it was a typo when I saw the 20 people had died. I mean, it's just such an enormous number for what essentially is a one-vehicle car crash.
Yeah.
Now, it's a limo, so it's a vastly different kind of car, as you've been hearing, about the stretching that goes on with normal cars that turn them into limos. Whitney Lloyd is with ABC. She talks about other hazards associated with these cars.
When they extend these vehicles, it's very difficult to get to an exit after a crash has happened. They don't add any extra, you know, doors or ways out necessarily. So it can be very difficult to get out of these vehicles after a crash has happened, which really impacts what the NTSB calls survivability, your ability to make it out of a crash like this alive.
And again, that's ABC's Whitney Lloyd. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says the confirmation of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh is his proudest moment as a senator. The Kentucky Republican telling Fox News he believes the most important thing the Senate is involved in is lifetime appointments to the courts. For the second time in a week, jail guards at a Bronx juvenile lockup are being treated for injuries. 17 correction officers were hurt Sunday trying to break up a brawl at the Horizon Juvenile Center. Last week, 20 guards were attacked and injured in a melee there. The guard's not allowed to carry handcuffs or use pepper spray on the 16 and 17-year-olds who were moved there. They all came on October 1st from Rikers Island. Now let us take a look.
And a very good Monday morning to everybody. Now, Joe, one of my favorite Broadway, he's really a legend now, and he can do it all. He writes, he dances, well, I don't know if he dances, but he sings, he acts really yeah, there's the, you know the voice. We are joined by Harvey Fierstein. His play Torch Song Trilogy about to be revived on Broadway at the Helen Hayes Theater. It begins previews tomorrow. Kinky Boots is now, I believe, in its fifth or sixth year, a very big hit on Broadway. And Harvey, well, the $1 million question for you is, can you dance?
I can dance, baby. I can dance. I danced in Hairspray, you know. But Jerry Mitchell kind of gave up on me doing the tap dancing in the big jail scene that opens Act Two. But it was the little girl that played little Inez. She took me on the side. She had two sisters, and the three of them taught me how to do that tap number.
Oh, good. Well, I remember you had a lovely, a gentle, romantic dance with the great Dick Latessa, who's no longer with us in Hairspray.
Yeah, no, there are sort of those magic moments when two people come together and a number gets performed, and I performed it with many great, wonderful, wonderful performers, but there was never magic like with Dick Latessa.
Harvey, do you remember the time after you left Hairspray, you and I think we were having dinner, and you wanted to go over and see old Beaver Cleaver, who went into Hairspray?
I did not want to go over. You wanted to go over. You were making fun. We were having dinner, and you said, I can't believe they put Jerry Mathers, the Beaver, into the show. And I said, oh, well, the audience loves him, and you didn't believe me. So we went over to the theater. I took you in the back of the theater. He made his entrance. The audience applauded. And I said, okay, let's get out of here.
I remember that very well. Hey, congratulations on the revival of Torch Song Trilogy starring Michael Urie and Mercedes Rule. I saw it when it was off Broadway. It was just terrific. Can you tell us, Harvey, how did you come to write that play back in the 1970s?
Yeah, I wrote it 40 years ago. It's kind of scary to think. I was writing, you know, I was doing all this stuff. I had started with Warhol. I was doing, you know, I was an art student, and I was doing all kinds of experimental theater and stuff, and I was acting in lots of different plays. And Ronald Tavell, the creator of the Theater of the Ridiculous movement, said to me, why don't you write a play? And I said, oh, I can't spell. And he said, there are people that get paid $2 an hour to spell. You go ahead and write. And I tell that to kids all the time. You know, it freed me up. And I said, well, why not? And I started writing, and Torch Song became, I think, like the fourth and fifth and sixth plays I wrote. And I guess I just never looked back.
It's been
so wonderful. I mean, to see it come back and to the same theater, it's so exciting. And they're really terrific in it. Well, you saw it off Broadway.
Oh, they're wonderful.
And now it moves to Broadway. Tonight's our dress rehearsal, and tomorrow night's our first preview.
You know, it's a collection of three plays, Torch Song Trilogy, of course. And, you know, the play that everyone makes everybody laugh, but I also think it's poignant, is the final play, when the mother of the young gay man comes to visit him.
Right.
I'm just wondering, Harvey, gay people are much more accepted today than they were back then, but that play still is poignant. The mother's still having a hard time accepting who her son is.
Yeah, but I think I think it's true for any mother-son relationship. I mean, there's a strange kind of pull there in most mother-son relationships. If you don't do well, they're mad at you. You know, for not doing well. And if you do really well with your life, they're mad at you for not needing them. And so there's a pull there of wanting to be needed and watching your son be independent. And Arnold is struggling so hard to be totally independent. And I don't think that has anything to do with gay and straight, though obviously the play is gay. But when we played it originally on Broadway, which is 35 years ago, the audiences were 99%, 95% heterosexual. Gay people were almost scared to come see the show. Like, if somebody saw them going to the theater, they would think they were gay. So you only had straight people going, and then gay people would sort of sneak in. What was wonderful about the show, 35 years later off Broadway was it had a much better mix of people, and everybody was in there together, and it was, oh, the feeling was so wonderful in that off Broadway theater. So I hope that's what happens on Broadway as well.
Harvey, good morning. It's Joe Bartlett. Michael tells me you have a great singing voice, and I'm fascinated by your voice. The only way I could sound like that is like drinking a whole bottle of scotch the night before. But do you enjoy singing?
Do you really think that would get you there, Joe?
I can't get there.
I
get
close. Joe, I don't know, Joe. You got to work really hard.
It's not as though he hasn't tried it, Harvey. Trust me, okay?
There's a show. You know, there are all these hip cartoons these days, and there's one called Big Mouth. and I voiced a character this season, and I watched it last night, and I was just laughing, you know, at that. I mean, I love doing voices because, of course, you don't have to get dressed up or nothing. You just go to the studio, you do your work, and it's lovely. And, of course, you then have the added attraction of another artist comes in and draws what he thinks your voice looks like. You know what I mean.
Oh, right.
So it's, you know, you get all kinds of stuff. I've done The Simpsons. I've done movies for Disney. I've done BoJack Horseman is another of the hip shows. All them wacky kids. They'll always find something new to watch.
Hey, when you get those calls from people trying to sell you something and you start talking, do they recognize you right away?
Well, I don't answer the phone.
Oh, he's got people to do that for him.
I think my phone message is something like, okay, you got me. What the hell you want?
Hey, Harvey, Kinky Boots is winding up its incredibly successful run. You wrote
another it's 6 more months, and then we're going to close it.
Yeah. You wrote it with Cyndi Lauper. I thought she did a great job at making her debut as a Broadway composer. Do you have any plans to write another show with her?
Yeah, I would like to. I would like to take her away from the adaptation world now and do something original. So I have an idea, and it's sort of percolating, and she's working on something else right now. So when she's free and when this idea percolates up, because I think she really is somebody that has drama in her heart.
Yeah.
I think she really does. But I'm just finishing a first draft of a show with Alan Menken.
Oh.
Once again, not an adaptation, an original idea. And I have a new play that's going to open at the Manhattan Theater Club in the fall. And Cyndi and I will get there. We'll get there.
And we got to wrap it up, Harvey. But any chance that we will actually see you on Broadway again? Any roles that you want to play?
We'll see. I did a play last year at the Public Theater called Gently Down the Stream, and they just asked me to do it in London. So I'm thinking about that and whether we come back to New York or not. I don't know, but we'll see. We'll see. I like saying yes, but I don't want to do caca poo poo.
Well, you gave me some of the best advice ever, which was say yes and see what happens.
Right. Or as Ellen Stewart would say, my mama from La Mama, she would say, always say no. You can say less yes later.
All right. The great Harvey Fierstein. Thanks, Harvey, for talking to us.
Bye, Joe.
Got to see you soon.
No,
that's not going to happen. His play, Torch Song Trilogy, it's being revived on Broadway. It begins performances tomorrow night at the Helen Hayes Theater, and it's one of the classics. And I'm going to make sure that you, Joe Bartlett, get a ticket to go
Thank
to see
you. I would love it.
Torch Song Trilogy. All right, when we come back, got a foot fetish? Have I got the dominatrix for you? Plus, your chance at $1,000 is coming up at 10:05 on 710 WOR. And now let's get the traffic from Cyndi Wakeman. Good Monday morning. Joe and I are wrapping it up here. Mark Simone is on deck coming up after the news at 10 o'clock with his special guest, Lionel. You know Lionel, don't you, Joe? Lionel.
I do.
Lionel talks a mile a minute, Lionel.
Him and Harvey Fierstein, the same kind of energy. Harvey's exhausting when you talk to him.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I feel tired. Like there's so much energy exerted when he speaks.
Totally, totally. And he's so much energy on stage, too. When he was in Hairspray, we were just talking to Harvey Fierstein, whose play Torch Song Trilogy begins performances tomorrow night at the Helen Hayes Theater on Broadway. And I was telling Joe during the break here, when Harvey's in a show, he keeps an attendance chart backstage because Harvey's from the old school where you do 8 performances a week and you do not miss. You don't call in sick. You don't say you got to take your cat to the vet. You don't say I'm not feeling too well. The job on Broadway is to give 100%, 8 performances a week.
That's a lot to expect from somebody these days, Michael.
Please, Joe. Come on.
8 days a week?
8 performances.
8 performances. Yeah. Okay.
But
okay.
If you're in a show with Harvey, he keeps the attendance chart back there. And if you miss, he puts an A, a big red A next to your name for absent.
We've heard that millennials might not have the same work ethic.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if it's true or not, but it's said.
It's true.
That in the office that millennials might be a little slacking. Do you see that happening in Broadway as well with that generation of actors?
Absolutely. This is why Harvey keeps the attendance record, because he saw it happening to some of the kids when he was in Hairspray. They just don't have that same kind of work ethic, and it does really bother veterans, the older guard, people like Harvey. Diana Rigg, in fact, when she was in My Fair Lady, she was upset that kids would call in and just not come to the performances. These old actors feel that it is, you are so lucky to have a job in the theater. The competition is so intense.
Well, that's what I was about to say.
It is so difficult to break into it that you damn well better show up for that job. And the audience is there to see the show at its absolute best because they've paid $200, $300, $400. And the show is at its best when everyone who is cast in it originally shows up for work. Not the understudies, but that cast that the director handpicked to make that show worth $200, $300.
Right. Like when I paid $200 to go see Ben Platt in Dear Evan Hansen.
And he
was
not
there. And I felt terrible because my daughter paid her own money to go see the show from her, you know, gift money.
Yep.
And we get there. And
oh, what
like,
a bummer.
Oh, she was devastated. And to tell you the truth, the guy did a good job, but it wasn't the same.
No.
It wasn't the same. You know, we were going to see him.
Yeah. You know, I have a friend, he was a Broadway dancer years ago. He's long retired now, but he was in the original company of West Side Story. Great Broadway musical directed and choreographed.
That one I know, Michael.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Directed and choreographed by Jerome Robbins. There was a revival a few years ago, West Side Story, and all the kids were missing performances. They were calling in sick. So I called my friend. I said, would you ever have called in sick to the original West Side Story? He said, are you kidding me? If your legs were run over by a bus, you would have crawled into that theater and performed, or Jerome Robbins would have fired you on the spot for not showing up. That's the kind of
business.
Work ethic. Absolutely. So very quickly here before we wrap it up, you heard about this artwork that's self-destructed.
I think this is
brilliant.
Great. Yeah.
All right. So this artist, he's a street artist. His name is Bansky. He does graffiti all over the streets and is quite famous now. He spray painted a canvas called Girl with the Balloon. It was sold at Sotheby's in London for $1.4 million. And right after the gavel went down, boom, Bansky, apparently he could control this remote control. He had put a shredder in the frame of the picture. And right after it sold, they said, sold for $1.4 million. Bansky hit the button, and the painting shredded, was destroyed, to the shock and surprise of everybody at the gallery, including, I would imagine, the person who just paid $1.4 million for it.
Yeah, well, obviously, that would have gone to Bansky, too, but he doesn't want it. He doesn't even care about money.
No, he well,
and nobody knows who this guy is. That's what's amazing.
He's a mystery artist.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a
does that
artist.
Person get their $1.4 million
but you know
back?
What? They said it's worth more now.
The shredding
than
is
it
worth
was.
More.
Yeah.
The shredding and the frame with the shredder in it.
Bonus.
Absolutely, because it's now got this notoriety. So you could turn around and sell those shavings, those pilings, for $2 million or something.
They said $5 million is probably worth now. His price now went up $5 million.
Wow. All right. Well, go to our website. Check out the shredding of the painting, 710WOR.com/LennonMichael. We got the Bansky art being shredded there. It's great. This woman's on the cell phone. She turns around and says, ah, because the painting just was shredded. And the other thing you got to check out at the website, the dominatrix who sells her feet. You can interact with her feet, I guess. And she makes something like $30,000. These videos that she has of her feet. Now, you looked at the feet, Joe, and you think they're... Would you play this little piggy went to market with those feet?
No. I mean, they're nice feet, but it doesn't do anything for me. I'm not paying money for that.
All right, well, go to the website, 710WOR.com/LennonMichael. There'll be pictures of the dominatrix feet. Joe is putting a picture up of his feet. I'm going to put a picture up of my feet, and Len is in his flip-flops his day off, so he's going to put a picture up of his feet. All right, don't forget that Mark Simone is coming up at 10 o'clock, and your next chance to win is after the news at 10 o'clock, and it is now 10 o'clock.